Hello, this is Auntie Bee's Knees with your business report for the week of April 14th. I was surprised not to receive any angry or skeptical emails after last week's installment on shareholder activism. You see, last week's program where I advocated so-called shareholder activism through resolutions put forth in proxy circulars to be voted on at corporations' annual general meetings was a bit of a belated April Fool's joke. If you've already switched your investments to ethical funds and are campaigning ExxonMobil to develop a renewable energy policy while their stock pads your portfolio, don't feel too guilty. You and thousands of other investors and groups like the Sierra Club and Amnesty International are working to sponsor corporate reforms that can help to bring corporate crimes against humanity and the environment onto the corporate agenda. But you also must consider that, regardless of the high-minded resolutions being brought forth at many corporate AGMs this spring, shareholders in these corporations ultimately have a stake in the dirty work of using power to extract profit. Also remember that corporate boards of directors do not have to implement these kinds of resolutions, even if they are approved by a majority of stakeholders. In terms of contributing to concrete changes in corporate policy and corporate structure, this type of shareholder activism can be misleading and ineffectual, especially when compared to the many more direct ways you can use your dollars and cents to change the world for the better. Firstly, take a look at where your own dollars are coming from. If you're working for a for-profit corporation, consider how the company turns a profit, whether it earns income from transnational holdings, if the company's products and services are socially and environmentally sustainable, and whether the company has contracts or clients involved in the military or other problematic industries. If you are afraid to voice concerns about your company's practices to employers, or feel reluctant to leave a company that has provided you with job security despite its controversial operations, take some time to consider how company policy is coercing you and other employees into being cogs in their profit-making machinery. Consider that the nonprofit services sector is one of the fastest-growing employment sectors in many industrialized nations, and while the stock market and dollar economies slump, keeping interest rates low, entrepreneurial types have a golden opportunity right now to kickstart small, community-based businesses that operate under ethical and responsible mandates and use their profits to help the community grow rather than to pad the portfolios of rich investors. If you are part of a corporate pension fund, consider the investments that are in the fund. Write letters to the investment company managing the fund and urge them to withdraw investments from companies that profit from weapons, sweatshops, logging, or other activities that concern you. A more drastic measure is to see if you can withdraw from the company pension fund altogether, paying pension contributions into an ethical fund or community investment project instead. If you work for the government or public sector, keep a close watch on privatization projects and other policy initiatives in the department you're part of. Monitor what corporations and business leaders are playing advisory roles in policy development and work to disseminate information about controversial policies and private-public sector alliances. If you are one of the fortunate minority that has an investment income, move your investments into ethical funds, community development banks, or companies whose products, services, and operations contribute to your vision of a just and sustainable world. Consider turning dividends from these investments over as tax-deductible donations to charities working for social and environmental justice. Which leads me to my second point. Consider who manages your money and how. The banking system is an essential player in the exploitative, profit-making system of corporate capitalism, and any plan to undermine corporate hegemony must include moving your money out of banks. Set up accounts at a local credit union or community development bank instead to ensure that your money is used to support people and organizations in your area. If you're a little more adventuresome, consider setting up community lending and insurance pools in your community. If you must own credit cards, transfer them to credit unions or banks with ethical investment policies. Once you've taken measures to ensure that your income is not dependent on corporate exploitation or managed by a profit-driven multinational banking institution, make an effort to watch more closely where you spend your hard-earned dollars. Take some time to evaluate your standard of living, consider what purchases and property are essential to your health and well-being, and what you can do without. Then hold a garage sale to lighten your load of unnecessary material goods and turn the earnings over to a community organization or community development project. Give your time or homemade gifts for birthdays and special occasions rather than shopping for presents at the mall. When you do buy, whether it's food, clothing, furniture, or appliances, consider that what at first appears to be a good deal is more often the product of sweatshop plantation or underpaid factory labor, or maybe manufactured out of non-renewable resources using environmentally destructive processes. Avoid goods that come with a lot of packaging or have been promoted with a lot of advertising, and avoid stores that are mega corporations in themselves, such as The Gap and Walmart. Instead, support local, independent stores and craftspeople. Shop for food at local farmers markets and buy organic produce, or even better, take the time to grow your own vegetables. Buy fairly traded coffee, chocolate, and bananas. Buy clothing secondhand or locally made from organic natural fibers. Pick up furniture at secondhand and antique shops rather than from new warehouse-style furniture stores. If an appliance breaks down, invest in a more energy-efficient model and try not to buy from the many electronics and manufacturing companies involved in weapons manufacturing and sales. You can take these concrete steps to undermine corporate power, regardless of your level of income. In fact, shopping at secondhand stores and buying local produce to cook at home is most likely to lower your expenses, giving you extra cash to spend on biodegradable household cleaners, tree-free paper, donations to community activist groups, and subscriptions to ad-free magazines. As you purge your household of Procter & Gamble, of Walmart, General Electric, Chevron, Texaco, Westinghouse, and Home Depot, you'll be taking part in an international movement to concretely alter the cycle of consumption that allows exploitative corporations to extract exorbitant profits at the expense of the survival of poor people and the natural world. This kind of grassroots economic activism can certainly be a whole lot more rewarding than waiting for your shareholder resolution to be overturned by the board of directors at your favorite multinational. In other news, as the U.S.-led war against Iraq enters its final stages, bigwigs at U.S. corporations involved with the Bush administration are rubbing their hands together in anticipation of the rewards to be made from so-called reconstruction projects in Iraq. U.S. former Secretary of State George Shultz sits on the board of directors of Bechtel Group, the largest contractor in the U.S. and one of the finalists in the competition to land a fat contract to help in the rebuilding of Iraq. Shultz also happens to be chairman of the advisory board of the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq, a fiercely pro-war group with close ties to the White House. The committee, which formed last year, seeks not only an end to Saddam's regime, but, quote, to work beyond the liberation of Iraq to the reconstruction of its economy, end quote. Jack Sheehan, a retired Marine Corps general, is a senior vice president at Bechtel and a member of the U.S. Defense Policy Board, a government-appointed group that advises the Pentagon on defense issues. Its meetings are classified, and though members disclose their business interests to the Pentagon, this information is withheld from the public. Defense Policy Board members are selected by the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy and approved by U.S. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. The Center for Public Integrity, a watchdog group in Washington, D.C., recently disclosed that of the 30 members of the board, at least 9 are linked to companies that have won more than $76 billion in defense contracts over the past 2 years. Until a few weeks ago, the Defense Policy Board was chaired by Richard Perle. Though he resigned as chairman amid allegations of a conflict of interest, he is still, nonetheless, on the board. The transitional government of Iraq is to be headed by retired Army Lieutenant General Jay Garner, who has worked not only for the U.S. military, but as the president of defense contractor S.Y. Coleman. The Bush administration has also granted up to $7 billion in contracts without competition to a subsidiary of Halliburton, the former employer of U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney. The contracts to clean up oil well fires in Iraq give Halliburton subsidiary KBR a 7% profit. Democrat representatives on the House Government Reform Committee have asked for an investigation into how the Bush administration is awarding contracts for the reconstruction of Iraq, which could amount to as much as $100 billion. They're also asking the General Accounting Office and investigative arm of Congress to determine whether Vice President Dick Cheney's former company, Halliburton, received favorable treatment in their Pentagon contracts. The Securities and Exchange Commission has begun a formal investigation into Halliburton's accounting practices, focusing on an accounting change made in 1998 during Cheney's tenure as CEO. The web of relationships among powerful individuals inside and outside the Bush administration operates under very little public scrutiny and is saturated with conflicts of interest. And lastly, while they bicker at the United Nations, the world's most powerful economies don't seem to have as much trouble coming to an agreement in the exclusive realm of the Group of Seven. Last weekend, finance ministers from the world's seven richest nations claimed the first diplomatic agreement on Iraq since the rift within the United Nations Security Council. Britain brokered the last-minute deal that paves the way for G7 collaboration on the economic reconstruction of Iraq. The G7 nations, which include Canada, the U.S., Great Britain, Italy, France, Germany, and Russia, agreed on the need for a multilateral effort to help Iraq and cleared the way for negotiations to resolve Iraq's estimated $190 billion in foreign debt. The finance ministers of the G7 agreed this debt must be addressed by the Paris Club, an organization of 19 creditor nations that negotiate deals with cash-strapped states. America has urged France, Germany, and Russia, Iraq's main creditors, to cancel their debts, but these nations are naturally not inclined to write off billions of dollars in debt to help rebuild a country damaged by military action that they opposed. Hans Eichel, the German finance minister, said, quote, any speculation about debt forgiveness is very, very premature, to put it in cautious terms, end quote. The G7 agreement was echoed by a committee of the International Monetary Fund, or IMF, chaired by Britain. This group, which also met over the weekend, agreed broadly that the IMF and World Bank should play an important role in helping to finance any new Iraqi regime. But it also supported the need for a new UN resolution, something that the U.S. has resisted for fear of giving the UN too great a role in the rebuilding process, which, as we've already mentioned, is shaping up to be quite profitable for U.S. corporations with ties to the Bush administration. The G7, IMF, and World Bank meetings were all held in Washington, D.C. And that's a wrap for this week's Business Report. Signing off, this is Auntie Bee's Knees reminding you to put your money where your mouth is and invest ethically.